From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
And yes, typically, and even today, if you want to try, we do encourage you to be a part of the conversation by calling in or texting. Like yesterday, actually all this week, our engineer Jared is enjoying time away from the studios, so I'm pulling double duty and engineering the show as well as hosting. So we'll do our best if you're going to call or text or what have you. But we have plenty to cover with our guest. We'll get to that momentarily. Some house cleaning real quick. For those of you still interested in helping with the earthquake relief, maybe you kind of heard us talking about it and you were like, wait, who, how, what? Well, here's what's going on. Samaritan's Purse from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association, right from the start, soon after the very first earthquake weeks ago in Turkey, I was working through partners to assess the needs there after the deadly earthquake and powerful aftershocks for, you know, not only immediate, but then over the next few weeks after the original earthquake. And if you want to take part in that, you can go to SamaritansPurse.org and find ways that you can assist with the relief efforts. That is SamaritansPurse.org. And want to encourage you to tune in to ABQ Connect throughout the week in the 1 o'clock hour, including tomorrow. We'll welcome Nourish Nutrition Counseling onto the broadcast. And of course, an update from John Moore Associates. We're going to, if you missed last week's update, it's actually pertinent enough. We're going to re-air that on tomorrow's show and then get a fresh update from the Heritage Foundation as part of the Friday ABQ Connect as well. All right, with that, we welcome Paul Gessing into studio from the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, thanks for coming down again.
Good to be with you, Steve. Lots going on in Santa Fe.
Yeah, and when's the session end?
The 18th. That is at noon on Saturday, the 18th. It'll finally be done, and we'll lick our wounds, see what things good happened, and assess a lot of the damage that happened. And I feel that we're going to be doing a lot more of the latter than the former.
Yeah, well, and the strategery going on there, is it not untypical, or is, you know, typically, aren't some of the things that people don't want to get a lot of attention and get in there and get it, you know, kind of sneak under the wire, stuff that might come up here in the next week?
Yes and no. So the process in Santa Fe can be manipulated. There's no doubt about that. In a 60-day session, halfway through, you're not going to have any new bills introduced. But what they will do is introduce what are called dummy bills. They introduce those before the filing deadlines, and it's basically, you know, HB whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have any text in it, and they will...
A distraction, kind of? Or?
Well, they'll take text of a bill that they want to push through, and that tends to move a little quicker under the radar screen, especially if they really want to push something specific. Now, they actually... and this is one of the positives that just happened, is there was a dummy bill called SB 520. Generally, those bills have higher numbers because you have substantive bills introduced throughout the session. That bill was introduced late in the session, obviously, due to its high, that high number is an indicator of that. This is the net zero concept, net zero being... By 2030, we're going to reduce CO2 emissions by 50%. Oh, okay. By 2030, it's going to be 75%. And by 2050, somehow magically, we're going to totally eliminate CO2 emissions overall. You know,
there'll be no humans breathing.
apparently, yeah. point. Now, this got its first hearing a couple days ago in a committee, and... Because of a legislator absence on the Democrat side, and because Senator Joe Cervantes, one of the more powerful members of the legislature, decided his take was basically that this legislation is not really powerful. It's not going to actually do what it says it'll do. I don't know if I agree with that logic. I agree partially that, you know, a governor here in 2023 with the legislature is going to be hard-pressed to really impact legislation in 2030 and 2040 and 2050 after they have left office, after they are no longer remembered by anybody living.
Well, it also kind of gives the feel for me of pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, yeah. So that bill failed in its first and only committee hearing. So that was a priority of the governor, and still in that first hearing died. So that's one of the more nefarious ways. It's happened differently in other sessions where dummy bills get put full of bad policy and rammed through the process. But they still have to introduce and move bills through the process. And it's a relatively transparent process, at least if you keep an eye on it like I do.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to give anyone the wrong idea, you know, about me and the way, but I, you know, part of me is like, well, you know, you do what you can to make the right things happen. Or, you know, obviously other people like you, you know, you said nefariously, maybe both depend, you know, whoever does, you know, does that is acting that way. But anyway, kind of gives us a little insight, Paul, to just how things work, you know, not only around the Roundhouse, but probably in every state's legislature and at Capitol Hill. But we have plenty to talk about. And I know one of the things you wanted to make sure to tackle today was discussion about Omnibus New Mexico Tax Bill, a tax policy disaster. That's the headline for Paul's article at errorsofenchantment.com. And I'll probably have a couple questions, Paul, but let's jump right into that.
Yeah, so this is another dummy bill. Now, this one is kind of a more typical dummy bill in the sense that the way it works in the legislature with regard to tax policy is that every bill gets its hearing in House or Senate tax, depending on which body it's introduced in, and it's tabled after that committee. Now, you hear testimony from proponents and opponents, the sponsor, etc. So legislators are supposed to form some opinions that way, and then, of course, they have their own views on the issue, but they're all tabled. That means in most committees, a tabling means you're dead. That bill is dead. But in tax committees, what they do is they pull those bills onto the table, and then towards the end of the session, with a couple weeks remaining, the leadership in both houses, tax committee chairs, et cetera, they get together and they come up with a omnibus tax bill. And if you follow what happens in Washington, D.C., you know that omnibus is like a big Frankenstein monster of different things brought together. It's almost like that in Santa Fe, except for it's not numerous different subjects. It's pretty much all the tax bills. And based on the fact that we have a $3.6 billion surplus, as you might imagine, there's a lot of action and a lot of policy being made in this tax bill this year. So we had high hopes coming into this session about a couple of things. One is that we were going to see gross receipts tax reform. We've talked fairly frequently about how the gross receipts tax works and how harmful it is to businesses in the state of New Mexico, how it taxes inputs and services that are not really taxed in other states, and what a big issue that is. We've also talked about the medical provider shortage and some of the issues there. And of course, I need to mention again, this is all with a $3.6 billion surplus. Yeah. So the bill is HB 547. Again, a dummy bill, but this one's more of a traditional type bill because it's an omnibus bill. So lot in this bill. First and foremost, raises personal income taxes, creating two new tax brackets. Now, when Bill Richardson was governor, he helped reduce taxes alongside the legislature to a top rate of 4.9%. That was the top income tax rate.
I saw that when you sent the stuff over, and I'm not going to lie. I was a little surprised. I I'm kind of under the impression what we're experiencing here is even more quote unquote progressive than what Bill Richardson would have done.
That would be my take. Yes. In fact, I was sitting in a outside a hearing on this bill on Monday, just lobbyists and stuff talking. And this lobbyist said the legislature is officially making its break with Bill Richardson on tax policy, which, you know, Richardson was a lot of different things, but he was certainly more moderate on taxes and broad economic policies than our current crop of Democrats, everybody from the governor to the legislature. So, yeah, Richardson was a tax-cutting governor. He did a lot of other things that I wasn't really supportive of, but taxes he reduced. And our tax rate went down to 4.9%. It was 8.2% when he took office. And so now the legislature's moving dramatically up towards that 8.2% rate. And it's also taking 6.5% and applying it to more people. So any family making over $200,000 will pay that 6.5% rate. That's a significant increase. And those taxes are borne by a lot of people who, you know, we want to bring to the state. And I'll just mention, medical providers, right? We just talked about that. Well, who are some of the higher earning people that we want to bring to New Mexico? Certainly those doctors and medical providers will be impacted. In fact, he was the chair of the House Tax Committee, Derek Linte, was asked about this in Albuquerque Journal. And it said, the quote was, as for those who might face a tax increase under the personal income for New Mexico, Linte suggested that doctors, engineers, and other high-wage earners could afford the increase. They can, but they may not come to New Mexico to practice their medicine.
Yeah, and part of the reason they have the bank account they have is probably because they make decisions that keep it that way. I do have a quick question. You mentioned what would happen with this bill would be for those earning over $200,000 going from 4.9 to 6.5, and that's over 200,000, but not over 500,000. We'll get to that other rate here in a minute. But Paul, for married couples earning less than 200,000, is there something less than 6.5 that'll
still be 4.9%? Now, in this bill, there are some reductions at lower rate levels, and this is the essence of progressivity. Progressivity means that not only, you know, it's often a misnomer that the rich don't pay taxes in a non-progressive or regressive tax code. The progressivity, like our federal tax code, is that the rich also pay more as a percentage of their income. So the rates go up as they make more money. And that's what we haven't had as much progressivity in our taxes. Now, there are some people who think progressivity in taxes is great and hunky-dory. I am not in that group. I think that New Mexico taxes should be paid at a one rate, equal across the board, in that if we want to do specific things to help the poor out, we should have programs for that in all kinds of different ways. We already do that, probably to our detriment, the generosity of those programs. But
let me say something real quick on that, tongue in cheek to the voter. Clearly, this is the way residents in New Mexico want it.
They vote with these progressives,
right?
And I think that's a fair statement. I do, because we have these voting patterns over decades and decades.
And for those of you listening, saying no, we don't. Well, and then I'm asking you. Well, did you go to the polls? And if you did, good on you. Regardless of how you voted, let me just say, good on you for going to the polls. But, I'm I'm convinced that if things might be different if we had a better voter turnout.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just about can they pay more. As you know, we said earlier, hiring people are the people that provide specific services that are in high demand. This is not a swipe at lower income earning folks, but you know, you can find a lot more people at lower wage scales than you can find at higher wage scales to fill in those jobs. Pretty much anybody off the street can operate a cash register at McDonald's with enough training. Not everybody can do heart surgery and treat high-level medical situations and has the aptitude for medical school. That is why those people get paid a lot more money. And it may feel good to enact progressive policies that come after those folks in some way financially, but New Mexico clearly has a problem keeping medical professionals here for a whole variety of reasons that we'll talk about some of those later on in this conversation. But we need those people here, or New Mexico is going to really have some dire, dire problems, because our population is not growing that fast to begin with as a state. And the people who have been moving here in recent years tend to be on the older side. Those people who tend to be on the older side, doesn't surprise anybody, are going to require more medical services. And you're not really going to want to travel out of state to doctors as a long-term proposition.
No, I don't want to do that, and I'm sure most of our listeners don't. Paul, I think there's plenty more actually to cover.
Absolutely.
on HB 547. We're up against the break, and we'll pick it up here when we come back. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right, we'll be right back after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect, spending time this hour catching up with Paul Gissing at the Rio Grande Foundation. Encourage you to go to the website, riograndefoundation.org, and you'll find a lot of what we're talking about on Paul's other site, heirsofenchantment.com. When we went to the break, we were right in the middle of talking about HB 547 currently making its way through the roundhouse. And one of the things, Paul, that you and the Rio Grande Foundation had found, that the proposed bill raises personal income taxes, and one of the two brackets affected by that, we mentioned those earning over $200,000 but not over $500,000, their top tax rate rises from 4.9 to 6.5, but that's not all.
Right, and I'll conclude the conversation about income taxes and tax policy, and just say, you know, jealousy is one of the seven deadly sins, and take it into that mode, because you know, progressivity in taxation is pretty much based on the idea of jealousy, that you should get less, that you should have more taken from you by the state because you earn more money. Now, you know, again, if you charge a flat tax, 5% or whatever, or better yet, charge a zero personal income tax, you're the kind of state that's going to do well and also attract lots of people across all kinds of different spectrums who want to work and earn the living that they are entitled to from their work and not have government taking more and more of their money. If you're going to tax income, which again, I recommend against, a flat rate is much more morally equal and treating people the same, not legislating and taxing based on, oh, you know, so-and-so earns more money, I want him to pay more as a percentage of their overall taxes. It's not good morally or from a taxation perspective. And that's where this legislature is moving too. Now there's a bunch of stuff. Capital gains taxes are what you get when you sell something big, or you make a stock, you sell a business, you sell a property. They also raise that. There's a increase of green giveaways for electric vehicles and charging stations, increase in corporate taxes.
Why does the state need more when there's a surplus?
That's an excellent question, but I've sat through the committees on this, and I've read the op-eds from the people who are pushing these policies, and you know, I'm not throwing the jealousy thing out there for no reason. I am talking about that because that is the driving force here. The people in charge in Santa Fe are pushing these tax hike policies, not because the government needs the money, which it doesn't, but because they want to come after folks that they see as the rich. In fact, a opinion piece in Friday's Albuquerque Journal specifically talked about raising the capital gains tax. And again, the senators, Worth, Majority Leader Worth, and Shendo, Tax Committee Chair in the Senate, they said that the tax cuts under Governor Bill Richardson were a mistake, and that they want to raise the tax on capital gains.
And again, the only reason to say, well, the reason it was a quote unquote mistake is because the rich, or what they would call the rich, according to these brackets they've created, aren't getting taxed at a higher percentage than.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just their view of fairness, which fairness now has been replaced by equity. Equity means equality of outcomes, not equality of opportunity. Equity is an immoral and evil, I will throw it out there, evil concept. Equality of opportunity is a great concept, and America's built on that, but equity is nefarious. And the problem is, it sounds so similar to equality. Equity is nothing of the sort.
So, Paul, can we move on to rebates?
So the governor wanted $750 or $1,500 for individuals and married couples, respectively. This bill has $300 and $600 in it. So definitely way smaller rebates.
Yeah, I have to tell you, as you know, obviously someone like most of us who received rebates over the last few years, I had mixed feelings about it. Now, the federal rebates, when I got them, I thought, well, we're trillions of dollars in debt. Why shouldn't all that go towards getting us out of debt? Now, I will be transparent to tell you, I didn't put it in an envelope and send it back and tell them to do that. I spent it. I did. I guess the feeling I have when the state does have a surplus like it does is, okay, well, you know, maybe you were taking too much before, and yeah, I'll take the rebate.
Yeah, I agree. I have mixed feelings about rebates, not because I don't want money back, but because there's a lot of people who hover on the fringes of the workforce who will be lulled into not taking a job or
skating by. 300 or 600 or 750 or 1500, that's a Band-Aid.
And the governor, to her credit, has questioned this and hopefully will consider the overall bill. And I'll run through the last few things. So tobacco tax increases, whatever you think about tobacco, increased dramatically. Taxes on alcohol also increased dramatically. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're a reasonable drinker, responsible drinker, or an alcoholic, you will face higher taxes, assuming you buy through the proper channels. There will be reductions in the gross receipts tax, but none of the reforms that we talked about in need in our gross receipts tax system. So, the governor has questioned the reduced size of the rebates. The governor ultimately kind of, I think, has to look at this and say, I am going to get absolutely hammered when it comes to the politics of raising all of these taxes on so many different New Mexicans, especially doctors, when you have a $3.6 billion budget surplus.
Right, and we're going to get to that later in the show, talking about how difficult it is to get them to come here.
Yeah, so this bill, again, HB 547, is on the House calendar right now, which means it could pass through the House. It could be, it will be, I think it's safe to say, passed in the Senate sometime next week. There could be some changes, but ultimately it's going to be the governor's opportunity to veto or to line item veto certain provisions in this bill, possibly call him back for a special session. I really think that the most fruitful person, interestingly enough, based on all of our past disagreements and current disagreements, Governor Lujan Grisham may be the point person here that has the most to lose by going down the path of this very harmful piece of legislation.
And Paul, just to clarify, we didn't mention it, but I just want to ask, I'm pretty sure I know what it is. The tax credit for energy storage systems, I'm assuming that's for solar panels.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Okay. All right. Any more on HB 547?
No, that is a big bill. A lot of big policies in there, and very disappointing, quite devastating to businesses and just the economic health of New Mexico.
All right. We've got more to talk about with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. We encourage you to go to the websites, riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com. And actually, Paul, before we take a break, and we'll probably do this at the end of the show too, but people can't always stay with us, and I want to make sure to mention you have an event coming up on the 31st.
We have an event coming up on April 5th. Sorry, the 31st.
It is the last day to buy yeah. tickets. The event is on April 5th at the Albuquerque Marriott Pyramid. But you have a guest speaker coming
yes.
to town.
We have a gentleman named Todd Myers. He is the environmental policy director at the Washington Policy Center up in the Seattle area. He has written a book called Time to Think Small, How Nimble Environmental Technologies Can Solve the Planet's Biggest Problems. And basically, the idea of what he's talking about, you can find more on this at errorsofenchantment.com or riograndefoundation.org. The idea is just because you oppose big government's solutions, quote unquote, to environmental problems, doesn't mean you're not an environmentalist. You don't care about the planet.
Right.
Todd cares deeply about the planet, as do I, but we just don't think government is very well equipped and government policies and mandates are the best way to save the planet. And so, you know, April is kind of Earth Month with Earth Day during that month. And we who support saving the planet, so to speak, also want to see free markets, limited government, individual responsibility. And that's the idea that this talk is all about. So it's okay. On April 5th.
And before I get emails and letters, let me make it clear that we understand the way to save the planet is through Jesus Christ. What we're talking about is letting government handle how we should be stewards of the environment that God's put us in. And this is an opportunity for you to hear more about that. And the details on the event that's coming up April 5th is on the websites that Paul mentioned, riograndefoundation.org and errorsofenchantment.com. And we're going to come back. There's more to talk about after the break on ABQ Connect.
I'm Evangelistic Association.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE.
Thanks for joining us. We're in the middle of a conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. You can find information at riograndefoundation.org. And Paul's blogs, typically it's Paul writing, but others have contributed, I suppose, in the past. But you can go to errorsofenchantment.com. You'll find information there as well. Paul, we're moving on considering other things going on in the Roundhouse, including SB 296.
Yeah, and SB 296 is only one of several bills that have been introduced this session to address the medical malpractice legislation that was introduced a few years ago and passed into law and has caused havoc and further exacerbated our physician medical provider shortage. It's dramatically increased the price of insurance that doctors have to cover for medical malpractice. There's a lot of different bills that, like I said, have already moved into their committees and been killed in their committees. SB 296 was the latest effort to do that, and it was also killed last week. And it just reinforces the point that I've been making, is that the powers that be in Santa Fe are not serious about addressing the medical provider shortage because they are too busy supporting the trial bar and attorneys that will make a lot of money if and when they get to sue these doctors and medical providers. But
and the other thing, because it was in the news this week, a lot of people have elected, whether it's dental or other things, elective surgery or necessary surgery, because of cost, have elected to go to Mexico in years past. And that's becoming less and less attractive, as we saw in the news this week with a tragic story about someone, a group of people who'd gone down there. And my understanding was, for some of, for some of those reasons. We certainly do want to make New Mexico a place that's attractive for healthcare providers.
Yeah, and I always tell people, and kind of reiterate it here, that there are a lot of different issues at play when it comes to why medical providers don't come to New Mexico. We talked about tax rates, and the fact that Texas has no personal income tax, that makes a difference. Medical malpractice law and insurance and the threat of lawsuits is a very real issue, and that's where this medical malpractice issue comes in. There are other taxes like the gross receipts tax, which impacts medical providers. And then there is crime. There is school quality. A lot of other issues are at play. And the problem is, when doctors look at New Mexico, it's not maybe just one thing or two things. It's a lot of things that they see about New Mexico. Oh, and then there's the high Medicaid population here, which Medicaid does not pay particularly well. There was a cartoon, again, in the Albuquerque Journal last Sunday, where you had an escalator into a building, and it was patients on Medicaid, hoping for their medical services. And then the down escalator was doctors leaving the building, and they're heading out of state. And that's the way things are going in New Mexico, is that we are losing our medical providers and our population's aging. And those are bad combinations. The good news, I guess, if there is any of this, is that we are in the largest urban area in the state, but that means that we're now competing for time in front of doctors with folks coming from rural communities around the state who have to, travel to Albuquerque or to other places in order to get coverage. And the tragedy down in Mexico is an example of that. It's not uncommon for people, especially who live in the Southwest, who have the ability to get to the Mexican border relatively easy, to go down there because there's a lot less onerous regulations and rules. And I'm not going to get into the differences between Mexico and the United States, but
yeah, there's got to be a balance.
But yeah, there's a opportunity that people see to obtain medical procedures more cheaply, and it's just a tragedy that happened. But we definitely are not doing what needs to be done here in New Mexico in this legislative session, despite the massive budget surplus, to actually make an impact on our medical provider shortage. In fact, we could be doing great harm with that tax bill that I talked about.
Okay. And Paul, headlines. The emergency's over.
Yeah.
Now, a question. Announcing that the emergency is over, does that discontinue executive privilege in instituting things that many of us weren't crazy about?
Well, it does, at least for the time being, although, you know, emergency could be reinstated at any time. So it's something that, you know, the governor has no limits on her emergency powers. But this particular emergency, the COVID emergency, which has been in place since, since March 11th, 2020. So it is worth noting here as I speak to you that we're 2 days away from the third anniversary of the COVID pandemic really coming to New Mexico in a significant way. The governor putting New Mexico into an emergency. She has announced that that emergency will finally come to an end after more than 3 years in place at the end of March.
Sure feels like it's been over for quite some time.
Yeah, and it just shows you that this whole emergency declaration has been highly arbitrary. A lot of people
I like your mention of California in the article. Yep. Our governor seems to like to follow what the governor there is doing.
Yeah, California, like New Mexico, is one of the holdouts, and we always at the Rio Grande Foundation cite the many parallels between what policymakers want to do in New Mexico and what they have done or do in California. And California recently, as of the end of February, decided that there was no emergency anymore. So here we are a month later, and New Mexico will be moving out of its emergency. So I guess, it's good news. Unfortunately, obviously, the legislature did not enact any policies to demand a seat at the table and demand an opportunity to participate in future emergencies. They're relegated to the sidelines if we wind up with another pandemic or, heaven forbid, some other kind of emergency. And I don't think that's a good thing, but Democrats don't want to hold fellow Democrats accountable in this state.
Hey, Paul, not really bushwhacking you, but it's not something we plan to talk about, but I'm curious if you're aware of the whole situation with, government workers. Are they back in their offices and those empty spaces that the government is leasing or was leasing? Has there been any change or update on that?
It seems like many of the government employees have gone back, but I'm hard pressed to find good, solid data on that. The way that I can normally tell during a legislative session when I'm taking the rail runner up, you really get an idea of just how many people are on board that train. And I haven't noticed, the policies have changed since the session began back in mid-January, and I haven't noticed any specific uptick in the number of people on that train. And I haven't heard any other stories about, people really getting back to their offices. There seems to be some challenges in just kind of accommodating everybody. Just chalk it up to government not necessarily being very good at managing their resources, whether it's human or physical buildings. I'd probably be frustrated if I worked for the state of New Mexico too.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're up against a break. We have more to talk about. We're in the midst of a conversation with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. That's riograndefoundation.org. You'll find a lot of the posts that Paul has put up on errorsofenchantment.com, the other website. And there's more to come. We'll get to it after the break on ABQ Connect.
On KLYT, this is ABQ Connect. There's still time to join the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
All right, thanks for joining us and wrapping up our conversation today with Paul Gessing from the Rio Grande Foundation. Go to the website, riograndefoundation.org or errorsofenchantment.com. And if someone's been listening to the whole show, I'm sure they get the idea of who exactly the Rio Grande Foundation is. However, Paul, we usually do this for people maybe unfamiliar. Maybe it's the first time they've heard you on the air with us. For those unfamiliar, would you let them know more about Rio Grande Foundation?
Yeah, Rio Grande Foundation is a nonprofit 501c3 organization under the tax code. We are nonpartisan, but we research and analyze public policy in New Mexico from a free market conservative perspective. And we try to hold New Mexico's leadership accountable for the way that they manage the great wealth that we have in this state. There's no reason at all we should be one of the poorest states in the country, especially at a time of one of the great oil booms that we've ever seen. But just in general, New Mexico has so much going for it. And the problem we have holding us back is our elected officials, I believe.
All right. And more to cover. We've covered several of the things going on in the roundhouse in the current session. The next is revisiting whether or not we're going to be able to cook with gas.
Well, we're still able to, and we're still going to be able to for the foreseeable future. The ringleader of the effort to stop gas stoves is our own Senator Martin Heinrich, however. And he constantly, if you follow him on social media, he is talking about how, you know, bad gas stoves are. He recently tweeted comparing gas stoves to cigarette companies and how we've known all the time that they have all these problems. Well, a new review of literature on studies of gas stoves actually found that they are not a significant determinant of residential indoor air quality. Specifically, indoor air quality is impacted far more by the act of cooking than the fuel you use. So what influences your air quality when you're cooking are the types of food, the oils used in cooking, cooking temperatures, time, and of course, proper ventilation. So, you know, a lot of analyses that attempt to make a causal impact, causal effect there when it comes to gas stoves aren't really, aren't really finding anything significant. Sometimes studies can be manipulated. I know that's a shock to people who have followed the COVID-19 situation for the last few years, but the gas stove thing is definitely forward-looking. In fact, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which at one point just a month or so ago shocked people when they said they were looking at gas stoves and possibly banning them, they quietly opened what's called a request for information seeking public input on the chronic so-called hazards associated with gas stoves. It's not a regulatory process yet, but it is the kind of thing that a government body can quickly turn into a regulatory process. So if you think that the politicians, the elites, are not coming after your gas stoves, you better be vigilant, because the people know no boundaries. They want to control all aspects of your life, including how you cook.
You know, Paul, whenever I see something like this, and it's kind of, maybe it's a knee-jerk reaction, maybe it's good, maybe not, but whenever I see something like this, the first thing that pops in my head is, all right, who's going to gain, you know, monetarily or back-scratching wise by them going away? You know, really, is it really that big of an issue with the, and like you said, it's not so much the gas stoves causing the issue, it's what people choose to cook on them.
Well, this is not, and Heinrich is not driven by concerns about indoor air quality. He is driven by his radical environmentalist viewpoint, which is against fossil fuels of any kind. It doesn't matter whether it's relatively clean natural gas, whether it's relatively dirty coal, everything in between. He opposes fossil fuels outright and wants to get rid of them. And
prefers EV chargers, fueled by diesel engines.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that there are alternatives to traditional fuel sources, but those fuel sources have their own problems. And I don't know that open pit mining is that much more environmentally benign than natural gas and stoves and natural gas for power plants. But for whatever reason, especially in this country, but also in many countries in Europe, the idea is out of sight, out of mind. As long as your car is not burning gasoline or your stove is not burning natural gas, you're okay with it, even though there may be places in China and Africa that are digging up vast tracts of land for rare earth minerals and putting, you know, young children to work in those mines in filthy, devastating conditions. So it's a very bizarre mindset. I don't quite understand it, but that's the way some of these folks operate.
Well, yeah. And then like any of these issues, make sure to communicate with your representatives and let them know where you stand on each of these issues. It's important that they know, so when things don't go the way you would hope in the roundhouse, well, there's an opportunity for you a few times a year for you to go and let them know where you stand. There's a couple more things since we have a few more minutes, Paul. And actually, we were talking about it off the air, and I forgot the family leave.
Yes, SB 11 is mandatory paid leave. It will be funded by a combined tax paid by employees and employers, and you know how that tax is paid is really irrelevant, because all taxes are ultimately paid by the employee. This is a little trick that's done in FICA and other federal taxes, because you know, as an employer, I can assure you that when I look at cost of hiring somebody, I look at all the costs, including the taxes that supposedly they pay and supposedly the taxes I pay. It ultimately all comes from the same place. But SB 11 is up tomorrow afternoon in the House Commerce and Economic Development Committee in the legislature. It's already passed the Senate. So this is one of those terrible, terrible bills that has a real chance of passing the entire legislature. It's just bad news. It's another bad policy aimed at businesses that will make New Mexico less attractive for the kind of economic diversification that we all claim we want, including the legislators up in Santa Fe. Instead, they'll be foisting more costs upon us, raising taxes. And there's real concerns about the fund that this new payroll tax is supposed to generate, $463 million to help fund the paid leave. And there's estimates that in just a few years, this fund will go belly up, because, you know, you put something out, free leave, people take it up and they won't pay enough into it. We've seen this before with Medicare, Social Security, and numerous other government programs.
All right. Well, Paul, before we leave, I do want to once again let our listener know about an event that you have coming up in April.
Yeah, we have a speaker named Todd Myers, and he is going to be talking about his new book, which covers environmental policy from the free market individual responsibility angle, Time to Think Small, How Nimble Environmental Technologies Can Solve the Planet's Biggest Problems. The event itself is at the Marriott Pyramid at the noon hour, April 5th, 2023. You can find information at heirsofenchantment.com or riograndefoundation.org. And you can get a copy of the book, et cetera, with your price of admission. So thank you.
All right, Paul, let's do this again, at least in the next month or so.
We'll do it next month for sure.
All right. Thanks for joining us on ABQ Connect.
Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.